From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right, you are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. It is Friday, TGIF. That's right, you deserve a hand clap. You have made it. The weekend is near, it's upon us. And it is BEA beautiful outside. It's supposed to be near the 70s all weekend long. Enjoy it. The sun will be shining, the birds chirping, the grass green. And I tell you what, we plan on pushing you into the weekend with the bang here throughout this hour on Current Sports. On today's show, we will start off by talking hockey. That's right, playoff hockey concerning the Detroit Red Wings as they embark on game two on the road in Tampa Bay against the Lightning. The Lightning currently have a 1-0 series lead in the opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We will invite Jason Ruff, our hockey expert here on Current Sports, to engage in that banter. And we will also tackle the subject, I should say, of African Americans in hockey. The lack of diversity in the world of hockey. Why does it exist? We'll dive into that question. We will also give you a recap of last night's Current Sports TV sit-down with motivational speaker and author DeAndre Carter. He was absolutely dynamite on WKAR TV last night. So if you didn't catch that, you'll get a chance to hear a bit of that chat. And also in the back end of the show, we will chat a bit about Jim Harbaugh sniping at the NCAA. And of course, we will reflect with it being Friday with Reflection Friday. Call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners again for this Friday, April 15th. All right, a huge congrats to now former Michigan State women's basketball star Ariel Powers, who was selected fifth overall by the Dallas Wings in the draft. Now, Powers is the sixth Spartan to be taken in the WNBA draft and is the highest draft pick that the Spartans have. Wow, unbelievable stuff. And Ariel, we salute you. We look to have Powers on the show sometime next week, so stay tuned for that. All right, get this story. Michigan tailback Drake Johnson, he was involved in an accident at Michigan's indoor track and field facility on Wednesday. Now, according to many reports, Johnson, who is also a track and field athlete, he was run over by a forklift while stretching. Of course, Johnson plays for the Michigan football team as well. Now, Michigan revealed the situation in a statement release saying, quote, on Wednesday, an accident occurred at the indoor track and field building involving student athlete Drake Johnson. He was evaluated by a U of M athletic department team physician and was referred to the U of M health system for further evaluation. Quote, I was with the family last night, and I'll let them comment on the specifics, said head coach Jim Harbaugh. I feel better with that coming from Drake or his family, but he's doing well. I can tell you this, it would have killed a lesser man. He is blue, twisted steel. Very flexible and amazing. It is one of those miraculous things, but he's done well as can be expected. Blue, twisted steel. That's definitely going to be Drake's new nickname, all right? So we wish Drake Johnson well on his recovery. Freak accident there. All right. And Jim Harbaugh has been caught many things, including, quote, the Donald Trump of college football. Yeah, the title bestowed upon him by ESPN radio personality Paul Feinbaum. Apparently, Harbaugh is okay with the comparison and really takes it as a compliment. Yeah, get this. He says, quote, the only thing I do like about Donald Trump is he's not afraid to fight the establishment. In that regard, I will take that as a compliment. I tell you, Jim Harbaugh just making headlines everywhere. Every day, I feel like we've had a headliner concerning the Michigan football coach. All right, the Michigan State baseball team hit the road to West Lafayette for a three-game series against the Purdue Boilermakers. That starts today, actually. Now, Michigan State currently leads the Big Ten with a 23-6 overall record and 5-1 conference record. Purdue is dead last in conference play, sitting at 0-9. All right, the Detroit Tigers defeated the Pittsburgh Pirates 7-4 yesterday at PNC Park. Jordan Zimmermann was on point for the Tigers. Zimmermann allowed 6 hits, all singles, and 2 walks over 6 scoreless innings with 4 strikeouts. He has pitched 13 scoreless innings in his 2 starts as a Tiger. Now, the Tigers were led by Tigers third baseman Nick Castellanos, who went 3-for-4 with a home run, 4 RBIs, and 2 runs scored. All right, game 2 of the Stanley Cup playoffs is tonight for the Wings as they look to even up the series before heading home to the D against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Puck drop is set for 7 p.m. tonight. And again, we'll have plenty of hockey talk in just a second. Don't go anywhere. The 2016-17 NFL schedule was released yesterday. The Detroit Lions opened the season against the Indianapolis Colts. The Lions, who finished 7-9 last year, host their home opener in week 2 against the Tennessee Titans and have only one night game this year, the day after Christmas. Now, the Lions also host the Minnesota Vikings on November 24th. In their annual Thanksgiving game this season. They closed the season on New Year's Day against the Green Bay Packers at Ford Field, the first time they'll finish at home since 2012. And the first Lions preseason game will take place on Friday, August 12th, against the Pittsburgh Steelers at 7:30 p.m. I'm sure all of you were writing down those dates on your calendar. And last but certainly not least, a big shout out to Alexei Zubov. He is an unbeaten cruiserweight in the world of boxing. He will fight on Showtime's Showbox, the new generation card for the Turning Stone Resort and Casino out in Verona, New York. Tonight at 10 p.m., Zubov, who was born in Metzgersgrove, I probably butchered that, an industrial city in Chebyshkit, Russia, knows how the significance of tonight's fight will pan out. A victory will put him into the world title calculations. He meets Konstantin Binario, who is 10-0 with 3 KOs of Moldova. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of today's show. You know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Call in. I want to hear what's on your mind. Let the show begin.
In the 2016 WNBA draft, the Dallas Wings select Ariel Powers from Michigan State University.
Well, the first Michigan State player to be a 3-time first-team All-Big Ten player lands as the first pick of the Dallas Wings.
So mad about it, don't you get so mad about it, don't you get so mad.
Oh boy, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Friday. Happy Friday, ladies and gents, boys and girls. And of course, we are always honored anytime you all out there in Radio Land get a chance to tune in any weekday afternoon here on WKAR AM 870. I'm the captain of this ship, Al Martin, and we have a fun-filled show in store for all of you out there. And first, of course, as you just heard during that montage, I want to give a huge shout out to Ariel Powers. It was certainly a pleasure covering her for 3 years here at Michigan State University. And I do stand by this, folks. Out of what, the 5 years that I've been covering Michigan State women's basketball or hoops, period, Ariel Powers goes down as one of the best basketball players I have ever witnessed in person. Her versatile game to be able to do it all, her court vision, her first step, her jump shot, her tenacity and will to win will certainly be missed. Again, Powers, the third Big Ten player on the Dallas Wings roster, joining Amanda Zuhi of Minnesota and also Jordan Hooper of Nebraska. And it was really cool to watch the broadcast last night of the WNBA draft to see Ariel's parents there, as well as I believe her brother was there as well, sitting alongside Michigan State University head women's basketball coach Susie Merchant. And the Detroit native became the sixth Spartan to be selected in the WNBA draft and the first since Liz Schimmick in 2006. She became the highest Spartan ever drafted with the fifth pick, as Spartan great Kristen Haney was previously the highest Michigan State player drafted as the ninth overall pick in the 2005 draft. Unbelievable stuff. And also Ariel Powers, the Spartan forward, was one of three players from the Big Ten Conference to be drafted in the first round, along with Minnesota guard Rachel Banham, who has to be probably the second best player in women's basketball that I've ever seen in person, okay? I remember I was in the house for that Minnesota and Michigan State game where Ariel Powers threw up 40 points and Rachel Banham poured in 52. Unbelievable performance. But Minnesota guard Rachel Banham, she was drafted by Connecticut with the fourth overall pick, so right before Powers was selected by the Wings. And also Rutgers forward Kalia Cooper, who was chosen by Washington with the seventh overall pick. Boy, oh boy, it was a joy to cover Ariel Powers, and I wish her the best at the next level. It's not often that you see a college women's basketball player with a few years, maybe 1 year left of eligibility left, and deciding to say, you know what, no, I don't want to play anymore. I want to make my dream come true and go to the WNBA. It's so rare because, you know, when you look at the overall financial conversation when discussing the WNBA, I mean, the average rookie who goes into the WNBA makes around $36,000 a year, okay? So it's not like she's going to be swimming in money. But at the same time, this is a dream that Ariel has had since really the first moments that she picked up a basketball. She's let that be known, and that was a huge factor as to why she wanted to make this move. And what you see happen in the WNBA is that, you know, those who are drafted and go to the WNBA, what you'll find is in the offseason, they will actually play internationally to accrue more money. We've seen that with countless superstars in the WNBA. So, and what's really cool is, you know, with Ariel Powers being a Detroit native, of course, she was around to see the Detroit Shock when Detroit had its very own WNBA team. The Shock left, and actually, you know, the Wings, the Dallas Wings, was the new team, you know, the new kid on the block when the Shock went away. So in a way, it's like she's playing for Detroit, but she's not, if you catch my drift there. So congratulations to Powers, though. I know she is going to be fantastic at the next level. Folks, we've got a great show in store for you. And, you know, I want to start with the most interesting thing I saw since yesterday. And it was clearly the most controversial thing I saw since yesterday. And that concerns ESPN's own. I believe he's with ESPN. I know he used to make many appearances on ESPN and give his takes on the NBA, but I believe that since he's gone with Fox Sports now. His name is Jason Whitlock, and he actually filled in for Colin Cowherd on The Herd. Colin Cowherd, formerly of ESPN, now has his own radio show with Fox, and he's on vacay, so Whitlock filled in. And I'm seeing here confirmation that, yeah, Whitlock used to be a sports writer for ESPN, is now with Fox Sports 1 as a blogger with them. But anyway, Whitlock filled in, and he had a fiery, controversial take on Kobe Bean Bryant. And it wasn't saluting Kobe. It wasn't giving a hats off to Kobe Bryant's career, okay? So you don't want to miss that. We are actually going to play the fiery take of what Whitlock had to say concerning Kobe Bean Bryant, and you'll get our thoughts on that later on in the show, okay? So stick around for that. But I want to start off today's show by talking a bit of hockey. That's right. The Detroit Red Wings, folks, are in the playoffs. A very cool time if you are a Detroit sports fan right now, because you have the Detroit Pistons and the Detroit Red Wings both in the first round of the playoffs. And then you have the Tigers playing absolutely lights out right now. It's fun to be a Detroit pro sports fan. Okay, folks. But I want to get to this Wings and Lightning series because I find it so intriguing. Again, game two would take place tonight. Tampa Bay actually leads the series 1-0. In game one, Tampa Bay was able to squeak out a close victory. It was a battle. It wasn't a blowout here, folks. The Wings put up a pretty interesting fight, but they fell nonetheless. 3-2 the final in game one. We all know that Tampa Bay is entering this matchup a bit banged up. Their best goal scorer in Steve Stamkos, he's injured. He's got a blood clot in his arm, so he's not playing in this series. The question now when it comes to the Wings is, how do they rebound in game two tonight? Tonight, puck drop at 7 p.m. So, of course, we have to bring in our hockey expert here on Current Sports to dive into this conversation, to talk all things hockey and so much more. It's my pleasure to welcome Current Sports Production Assistant Jason Ruff to the show. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Al. How's it going? It's Friday. You know, Isaac's behind the glass in his suit and tie. I'm here in my suit and tie. You're sitting there chilling.
I'm looking like a bum right now.
You're looking good, though. You're looking good.
He looks like a bum.
I do. Exactly.
No,
thank you, Isaac.
Jason.
Yeah, just be real here. You guys are suited and booted. Isaac's wearing his Steve Harvey suit behind the glass. You're looking fly with your green and navy blue tie, because you're actually doing the Michigan State softball game later on this afternoon for the Big Ten Network Student U. You just don't do hockey, Jason. You're jack of all trades.
Exactly. And doing Isaac, it right after this.
Yeah, and I think Isaac is getting the humanitarian award, like the Nobel Peace Prize or something later on, right?
Yeah, that's right. Flying out to Geneva, Switzerland. I'll be receiving the Nobel Peace Prize this year. No, I'll be receiving a CAS internship award for actually my contributions here at WKR. So thank you to WKR for the opportunities of almost, or actually more than a year as of 2 weeks ago. So thank you for that, and I'm forever grateful.
All right, stop tooting your own horn. Let's talk some hockey now, all right? Let's go. Now, I want to dive into this series. First off, we got a cue to music. Again, we dubbed this segment 2 Minutes for Roughing with Jason Ruff, but hey, this is going to be more like 15 Minutes for Roughing. All right, here we go.
Detroit penalty number 52, 2 Minutes for Roughing.
Oh, my God. That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
It definitely is, Jason. All right, let's talk about the Wings first.
All right.
Game two again tonight. Now, I was doing some research last night, Jason, and I saw an article from Helene St. James, who we've had on WKAR's Current Sports before. She's a sports writer for the Detroit Free Press. Now, she wrote an article on Gustav Nyquist, who is a right wing for the Red Wings, and how he has just 3 goals and 7 points in 29 NHL career playoff games. Now, he had 4 shots on goal in game one. Very aggressive. He failed to convert on a Henrik Zetterberg power play in the third. Really golden opportunity there. But get this. He has just 3 goals in the last 30 games. Helene basically saying that Gustav Nyquist needs to wake up and start playing better here. And Nyquist had some few candid quotes in that article saying that he knows he needs to step his game up. What accounts for the funk that Gustav Nyquist is in right now?
You know, this is just one of those things where some players, for inexplicable reasons, just go on these cold streaks, even though, you know, maybe they were overhyped. Maybe they just had a hot streak. Maybe they're cold. Maybe they're normally hot and they're going through a cold streak. You never know. But the playoffs always have a way to separate the men from the boys. And I agree with that article. Nyquist better step it up, or otherwise he's not going to be with the Red Wings, or at least he shouldn't deserve to be with the Red Wings.
Well, the thing is, Nyquist just, I believe, just got a new contract with the
Right.
Wings. A contract
extension.
They're paying him a lot of moolah right now.
And he's not producing.
Exactly. And that certainly has to change if the Wings are trying to, if they want to be competitive in this series. Now, the young pups. I want to call out the young guns, not just Nyquist here, when having this conversation for what they need to do to make this competitive against the Lightning. Now, Justin Abdelkader, I believe, had the best game when evaluating how game one went. Even though the Wings fell, I thought that Justin Abdelkader was a consistent force in that game. Now, we brought up Nyquist, Tomas Tatar, also Dylan Larkin, Anthony Mantha, and also Andreas Antetokounmpo.
Anthony Seo.
I always butcher his name.
Kind of like good to see you, Anthony Seo.
Thank you for that correction there, Jason. Now, the young pups were this team. Again, this is a squad that has a lot of good young talent, but, you know, limited playoff experience. How do you combat that when going against a team like Tampa Bay?
Well, the thing the Red Wings do have as well is they have a lot of old playoff experience when you look at guys like Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and even Abdelkader as well. You know, Abdelkader's been around. This isn't his first rodeo either. So you need to have your older players take the lead. I'm not seeing that right now. And when you talk about the young guns, they eventually will step up. My question is, or my concern is, you know, will it be too little too late? But here's my biggest gripe about Detroit's offense, especially in game one. 0-for-5 on the power play. You get five opportunities on the power play, you don't deserve to win a playoff game. I don't care who you are. My Blackhawks did the same thing in game one. They went over five and they end up losing. So
why aren't
trade.
The Wings converting on the power play? What's the problem there?
You know, I think they just need to simplify. They need to move around and they just need to get shots on goal. I mean, Tampa Bay has a very good goaltender. Ben Bishop, I believe his name was. Don't quote me on
that.
Yeah,
34 saves for Ben Bishop in game one.
Very good. Very good goaltender. So he's going to be a tough nut to crack. They just need to get pucks to the net and keep crowding the net.
So is it a problem of physicality here?
It may be. You know, I watched game one. That was a very physical, quintessential playoff hockey game. But I think where the Wings really need to focus, more so than the power play, is their defense. Remember, Al, they had a 2-1 lead over Tampa Bay.
They did.
And they gave it up.
Right.
And the defense just collapsed. I mean, the game-winning goal was just a breakdown defensively for the Wings, the game-winning goal that Tampa Bay won. So if I could pick one thing for the Wings to focus on in game two tonight, sound fundamental defense. Don't need to be flashy. Don't need to be perfect. But make the safe, smart play. And let the offense come, because you have enough weapons on the Red Wings for that offense to come.
Now, I was also watching game one before I flipped over to the Kobe Bryant show in the Golden State 73-win victory. And, you know, something that really stood out to me, Jason, is the fourth line for the Detroit Red Wings. Anthony Nocio, Luke Glendening, and also Joakim Andersson, who, when you look at Andersson's playoff experience, I mean, you know, it dates back to 2013, in which he was able to play in the two rounds that the Wings were able to accrue in 2013 in the postseason. Also, he was a part of that playoff experience last year for the Detroit Red Wings. So some playoff experience for Andersson. That fourth line was mighty impressive, though. Is there anything to harp on when evaluating that?
You know, normally, again, playoffs, you have a lot of coaches. Coaching in the NHL is becoming more and more of a chess match. You want to get your checking line against your top line and vice versa. Oftentimes, that frees up your bottom lines to have, I'm trying to think of the right word here, they have freedom of movement, if that's
fluidity.
Applicable. Fluidity,
right.
Exactly. And more opportunities to make good plays and to be contributors, because everyone's focusing on those top two lines, on your top guys. Not a lot of people are focusing in on your fourth line or even your third line, so that gives them an opportunity to make an impact.
Definitely. And Jimmy Howard with 31 saves, he's still going to be the guy going into game two. And I think that's the right message as well. I mean, if you were to pull Jimmy Howard and put in Peter Mrazek, I think that sends the wrong message. It sends the message of desperation and panic. Way too early. Game one, you know, we're in the infancy of this series. So I think Jimmy Howard is still your guy. And 31 saves isn't bad, Jason.
No, it's not.
I did think, though, that he should have had that first goal of Nikita Kucherov.
Yeah.
But I thought that was like, okay, what's going on here? But overall, I thought Howard had a relatively solid game. He's going to be your guy going into game two.
I believe so. You know, unless Howard completely just drops the ball and Tampa Bay puts up 4 or 5 goals and makes this a 4-1, 5-1 route, then maybe you think about putting in Peter Mrazek. But I agree with you. In the absence of that, stay with Howard. Stay the course.
All right, let's talk about playoff hockey as well here, because I love playoff hockey. I must say, I don't watch really any of the regular season. But when it comes to playoff hockey, it's so crazy, because it just seems as though the physicality ramps up so much. And we saw that actually in game one. Like the first few minutes of the game, there were 13 penalties in 2 minutes of that game, which was really crazy. I thought that the referee was going to let them play a bit, but they were blowing the whistle left and right. And you mentioned the 5 power play goals that the Wings did not capitalize on. And also, Dylan Larkin hit by Alex Killorn. Welcome to the playoffs, Dylan Larkin, for the rookie. Did you see that?
That was a huge hit.
I mean, hey, welcome to the playoffs, young pup.
Welcome
and then,
to the
of
big
course,
show.
And then Alex Killorn, I mean, he also got into it with, well, I believe it was Braden Coburn as well during that game. So, Larkin did, excuse me. So, it's so interesting watching the physicality of playoff hockey as it goes on. But that's something that, again, when I mentioned the young pups for this team, this is going to help them mature and recognize that the playoffs are an entirely different game.
Oh, they are. And this goes back, you know, to the 70s, the 80s, the 90s NHL. I mean, there were some legitimate bad blood hatred between a lot of these teams. Like, if you were losing the game, you'd end up starting, like, a huge brawl just to send a message to say, hey,
right,
we're not going to get swept here. This is going to be a battle here. And, you know, that's what happens in playoff hockey. You know, us in the hockey community, this is our March Madness.
It definitely
right
is.
Right here.
It's nothing like it.
The physicality goes up. Everyone steps their game up a notch, and every game seems so important. It's great hockey to watch.
Yeah, it might not have seemed like the referees, and they didn't. In that first game, the referees did not let them play. But I tell you what, as the rounds go on in NHL playoffs,
they start
swallowing that whistle lot. And that's what I love about it. And in comparison, of course, like the NBA, even though I love the NBA playoffs, the game has become so just over-officiated, if you will. You know what I mean? And that's why I love the NHL, because when it comes to the Western Conference or Eastern Conference Finals, you better believe that you're going to see some big hits, and the referees are going to let those guys play.
All right.
Before we move on to this discussion, when it comes to diversity in the world of hockey, what do you think happens tonight in Game 2, Jason?
I think Tampa Bay is able to squeak out another win, and the Wings go home down 0-2 to Detroit. But I think there the Wings will get a win, or maybe two, in Detroit. But I think Tampa takes a 2-0 lead into the D.
Okay, and of course, the series for Games 3 and 4 go to the Joe on Sunday and Tuesday, and we'll see Al the Octopus return to the Joe. I always love seeing Al the Octopus. I read an article that they have put him in place, and he will be very visible.
Very visible.
Come Sunday.
Outside the Gordie Howe entrance, I believe.
Right, exactly. Folks, weighing on the Detroit Red Wings, how do you think this series will pan out as the Red Wings take on the Tampa Bay Lightning in Game 2 tonight? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's talk about diversity in the world of hockey. Now, this was really an impromptu conversation, Jason, that we had actually after we got off the air during yesterday's show. And myself, you, and Brett Cast, we all start to have a conversation. I don't even know how it started, about why there is really no diversity in the world of hockey and why don't African Americans play the game. Now, and from my experience, again, I grew up on the west side of Detroit, predominantly black area, when you look at the demographics of that area. And there's multiple reasons as to why I believe you don't see many African Americans playing the game. And first off, I always equate this conversation to the likes of what we saw when Tiger Woods hit on the scene in golf. You know, I mentioned this last week. No African Americans were really playing the game of golf until they saw Tiger Woods. I saw a direct effect of that. I remember telling you the story yesterday about how my dad is all of a sudden buying clubs and putting on golf shoes to go out to the driving range. And I'm saying, Dad, you don't play golf. What are you doing? He was like, yeah, I'm trying to be like Tiger, my man. I'm like, really? And then my neighbor, he invites me out, and he's raving about Tiger Woods. And I go to the clubhouse, and everyone's around the television on a Sunday watching Tiger playing a major. It was unlike anything I ever seen before. And the thing is, when it comes to hockey, sure, and you brought up a good point yesterday when we were having this discussion, Jason, that there are black hockey players. Historically, there have been many that have come across the forefront. But the thing is, when a young kid is looking at the game of hockey and they're seeing so few numbers, but they're not seeing a guy in hockey that looks like them, that is completely dominating the game, that inspiration quickly goes out the window. Yep. I believe that if you are going to get black youth to play the game of hockey, you can't just have a black hockey player in the league. He has to be exceptional at what he does. If Tiger Woods was just an average golfer, I mean, come on. No, it would have just been like another whiff out there playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you have an individual who is one of the best, if not the best, in the world of hockey, you better believe black kids will pick up a hockey stick.
Exactly. And I totally agree with you, because you've had a lot of African-American players. Hell, you have a lot of African-American players playing right now.
Right, you
or
do.
Or African-Canadian, I guess, if that's the politically correct term.
Right, exactly.
Because there are a lot of Canadians. But like you said, if you look at the league right now, you don't have a black player in the short list of when you think of the top players in the league right now. Like, if you ask me a short list of who are the top players in the league right now, I will say Ovechkin, Crosby, Kane. All those guys are white. Mm-hmm. But, you know, looking at the history of black hockey players, you know, the first black hockey player was Willie O'Ree, who played a single year in Boston, 1957-1958. You know, yes, he broke the color barrier, but he wasn't dominant in doing it. He wasn't like the Tiger Woods just came on the scene, holy cow, who's this guy?
Right,
he's
and Willie
like
O'Ree,
on fire.
Yeah, he broke the color barrier. He's like the Jackie Robinson of the world of hockey. And I actually, doing some research, I saw that Herbert Carnegie was actually the first black ice hockey star who played actually during the Great Depression. But he didn't break the color barrier. Willie O'Ree was the first one to do that. And there were no blacks in the NHL until, 1974, I believe?
Right.
Wow.
Again, and these are all Canadians. The first African-American to play hockey was in 96-97 by Mike Greer. Ironically, a Detroit native.
Exactly. He was a Detroit native. And, you know, and there's so many parallels, too. When diving into this, Jason, I'm pretty sure you saw this, too, when doing your research. There's many parallels when discussing the game of baseball and when it comes to breaking the color barrier because, again, you didn't see many blacks playing the game of hockey. But yet, sort of like the Negro Leagues when it comes to the game of baseball, the Colored Hockey League of the Maritimes, which is actually a province out in Canada, began in 1895. So you had this group of African Americans who decided to form their own hockey league.
Exactly.
In 1895. So there were blacks playing the game of hockey, but it took a while for them to break on the scene. Again, it really blows my mind when I think that there were no blacks in the NHL until 1974, that it took that long.
Yeah, and I think, and it's not really a race issue at all. I don't want people to go out there and say, you know, the reason there are no African Americans or black people in hockey is because, or the reason there's so few is because of race. It's because, honestly, not enough.
They're not playing.
They're not playing. And if you look at the demographics of Canada, hockey is traditionally a Canadian sport. You know, only modern day, only 2% of Canada's total population is black. And you just have a lack of availability to the youth. I mean, looking at some of the great black hockey players, I mean, I'm going to run through these four names, and you can tell me if you have ever heard of them either, you know, just on the street. Jerome McGinley.
No.
P.K. Subban.
No. I did see a feature on it. The only reason I know P.K. Subban is because HBO's Real Sports did a feature on him. So, yeah.
Kyle Okposo.
No.
Dustin Byfuglien.
Mm-mm.
Okay. So, Jerome McGinley is probably the greatest black hockey player that ever played. He was Canadian, started playing in 1996 in Calgary. He was the guy. NHL leading point and goal scorer in 2001-2002. Two 50-goal seasons, two-time NHL leading scorer, three-time league MVP finalist. Reached the 500-goal mark in his illustrious career. Made the playoffs six times in his Flames career, but lost in the 04 finals. He did not win a Stanley Cup.
Right.
You know, but back in that time, he was considered on that short list.
Right, right.
But why did he not have the impact that, say, like a Tiger Woods had? Here's my argument. It's because he was playing in Calgary, and if you look at the black demographic in Calgary, only 2.9% of Calgary's population identifies themselves as black, according to a 2011 census.
And this is where we have to disagree here, Jason.
Right.
I don't care if he plays for Calgary or if he plays for the Chicago Blackhawks. It doesn't matter. If you're going to inspire young kids to go out there and play, if you're going to have that tiger effect in the world of hockey, it doesn't matter where that individual plays. It matters how good he is. If he's the best at what he does or among that shortlist, as you mentioned, people are going to watch. And I have to give a lot of blame of this to the networks. ESPN barely covers hockey.
They
don't. You barely see hockey on their airwaves, if at all. And when they do talk about it on SportsCenter, they bring in who? Just one man, Barry Melrose.
Melrose
and Bucci. Yeah, they sit down and discuss it for what, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes tops, and then they're moving on, and we may not hear about it, you
exactly.
know, for a while.
That's my biggest complaint of ESPN.
And I also got to say this, Jason. Me growing up in Detroit, there's a certain stereotype that exists right now when it comes to blacks playing the game of golf. Golf is not looked at as cool in the black community. Simple as that. And again, that all goes back to representation, seeing someone that looks like them on the NHL platform, but it's not looked at as cool right now. And again, cost as well. There's some socioeconomic issues when we're having this conversation. It's a socioeconomic issue, it's a cultural issue, and I think it's a geographic issue as well. But you know, you have to have equipment. You know, you have to have hockey sticks. You got to have a hockey net, whereas opposed to basketball and football, all you need.
Right.
There's a basketball, and you can go out to the local park and find a goal. Football, all you need is a football and some bodies. That's about it.
Right.
So, but there's a stereotype there. I think, you know, and you know, a lot of kids don't like to push the grain. They don't want to be the outcast. So they do what's comfortable, and they play what's popular.
Right.
And right now, basketball and football are dominating in that conversation.
Right. And you mentioned the cost issue. There are ways to actually circumvent that. You know, Al, do not ever underestimate getting a stick and a ball and shooting between a few, you know, cans or whatever for a goal. I mean, that's how I picked up the game. I remember I'm 2 years old and my Tigger slippers with an oversized hockey stick playing with a soccer ball with my dad in our basement. But there are ways you can do that. You know, stick companies barely make wooden sticks anymore, which I think is a big mistake. I think stick companies need to start making wooden sticks. You know, you get three, even four wooden hockey sticks that cost less than a pair of Jordans. No, with the ball. So don't underestimate the stick and ball games on the pavement. You know, you could do urban roller hockey rinks. It's about the size of a basketball court. It's basically a piece of pavement, hockey boards around it, nets anchored in. You can play street hockey. That's a way to introduce kids to the game. Or if you want to keep going into the actual skating, you don't necessarily have to put it in, build an actual ice rink, because I know how expensive that is. There's this thing out there called synthetic ice that does not melt. You can just put it out there, either put it, you know, the size of a basketball court or the size of a full NHL arena if you have the space. Again, depends on it. And all you really need, it's a one-time cost. You set it down, you just let the kids play, and you can play it in the summer, you can play it in the winter.
And I understand it's all fine and dandy, Jason. But the thing, the root of this question is, who is going to do that? Simple as that. Who's going to go back to those communities? Who's going to go back to the urban areas and say, hey, let's try something different here? And that's why you have to have the black hockey players who are in the league today to go to areas and say, you know what, let's introduce the game. They need someone to introduce the game to them. Before we move forward here, we got to hit our break here. But to wrap up this discussion, I also did some research when it comes to the viewership in the world of the NHL. And I found that, and this study was conducted in June of last year, and the article comes from actually the Chicago Tribune. African-Americans have the highest growth rate among NHL fans at 1.4 times the overall rate. Now, this study was done by Scarborough, which is a national research media company. And I also found these statistics very, very interesting, which alludes to the positivity of the game growing within the African-American community here, Jason. In Chicago, the number of African-Americans who identify themselves as very or somewhat interested in the Chicago Blackhawks increased from 12.6% in 2011 to, get this, 21.9% in 2014. Here's another stat for you. The number of black fans who watched a Blackhawks game on television or listened on the radio grew from 28.1% in 2011 to 37.9% last year. Also, they made up 9.7% of Blackhawk fans in 2014, up from 7.1% in 2011, which is the only increase among racial groups charted by Scarborough. I think that's very telling. I think it also speaks to what success can also do in certain communities.
That's
true. In Chicago, the Blackhawks winning is turning some heads.
I will never forget after the Blackhawks won the 2015 Stanley Cup playoff. One of the local news stations doing a man on the street, and this random African-American guy's walking down the street. They ask him, hey, what do you think of the Blackhawks? I kid you not, this is what he said. You know how cool the Blackhawks are? I'll tell you, and this is going to sound crazy. They've got black people loving hockey.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Exactly. If you win, they will come, huh?
They will come. And you know what? You mentioned hockey becoming, or at least in Chicago, becoming more popular among the African-American demographic. Al, I'm confident that hockey version of Tiger Woods, let's just call him, I'm confident that person will come. It's just a matter of when. It's not a matter of if. It's
he's
when.
Out there. I think he's out there.
And he will come.
It's a matter of time. All right, folks. What do you think about the demographics of hockey and the lack of African-Americans within the game? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, if you missed last night's Current Sports TV sit-down with the one, the only, author and motivational speaker, DeAndre Carter, we will play a snippet of that for you. Don't go anywhere. Don't you do it. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, we are taking your phone calls throughout this hour, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one right now. We've got Michael from Saginaw on the line. Mike, how you doing?
What up, Al Martin? How you doing, my man?
I am blessed and highly favored, my friend. How's everything out in Sag Nasty?
That Ariel Powers got drafted by the Dallas team right down there. They was in Tulsa last year, but they moved to Dallas.
Right, exactly. They were. Uh-huh. They were the Tulsa Shock. They went from Detroit to Tulsa, now to Dallas. So they're like the I guess you could say the spiritual team of Dallas right now. So yeah, I mean, so Ariel kind of has a Detroit tie with that team now.
I was going to say that three kinetic players got drafted down. That's something that'll probably never happen in any other sport. Get three teammates off the same team getting drafted. That never happened.
Yeah, they went 1-2-3. UConn went 1-2-3 in the WNBA draft, of course, starting with Breonna Stewart, who had just a crazy year last season. She was fun to watch.
She was. I'm going to go with your conversation about hockey players and black hockey players since we're talking about Jackie Robinson Day.
Of course.
Here's what I'm thinking. The hockey players of color probably going to have to come from California or Florida.
Why do you say that?
The reason why I say that is in Michigan, we have a hockey team in Saginaw, our OHL team, and in Flint. But the black kids, you know, high school basketball here is just off the charts. It's sort of like football in the South or baseball in California. Son, the kids here, they're not going to be interested in hockey because I think high school basketball is it's a participatory thing. You know, the American traditional sports. Maybe in Detroit, they'll probably get a black hockey player to come along because Detroit's a much bigger city and they got plenty of rinks. But up here in the mid-Michigan and Flint and Saginaw, maybe Lansing or Battle Creek or Grand Rapids, the high school sports is still, and hockey is, it's growing in the high schools, but it ain't the traditional path, you know, that the high schools, like the other high school sports are.
Well, and this is what it comes down to, Mike, and I reiterate the point that I made before the first break.
Mm-hmm.
These kids have to see someone in an NHL that who's successful, who's great at what he does, that looks like them. Simple as that. Again, it was a firestorm when Tiger Woods was playing. You know, African Americans were coming out of everywhere, buying clubs, buying hockey gear. I mean, golf gear. It was such a firestorm that inspired so many. That wave has to equate somehow, some way, with an African American player in the NHL. Until that happens, I don't think we'll see the numbers rise tremendously.
So you think it's got to come from a non-traditional hockey market. It can't just come from Kyle Poso, he's from Minnesota. Michigan and Massachusetts and further out east where the traditional four out of six, the traditional six hockey teams in New York, which is kind of different, that it's never been no black hockey players come out of New York City.
Right.
You know, that's your biggest city in the United States. So, like I said, it has to come from a non-traditional era, like a warm weather climate where you don't have so many traditional things and people, you know, I mean, the growth has to be non-traditional. That's what I'm getting at.
Right.
What I want to talk to you about basketball. Here's a sport right here that has plenty of role models and everything from LeBron James, now Stephon Curry, and everything. When I was watching Kobe Bryant the other night and his highlights and everything, and Stephon Curry and his highlights, do you think the way the basketball is being coached and taught now, do you think you ever see anybody put up 50 shots or shoot like the ball like Stephon Curry?
So you're asking if we'll ever see Steph shoot the amount of shots that Kobe shot?
Kobe was, every time he wasn't passing the ball, he just was shooting it every time he got it.
Well, again, there's only been, four other players that have shot the ball 50 times at least in one basketball game. And actually, one of the most recent occurrences of that phenomenon happened when Michael played the game back in the 90s, Michael Jordan, that being.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, when looking at that game, of course, Kobe's teammates were catering to him because they knew that this would be the last time that they would see Kobe Bryant on the hardwood. They wanted to put on a show for the fans. The fans wanted to see Kobe put on a show, and Kobe wanted to put on a show. Simple as that. What amazed me was that every time down the court, I mean, Kobe's teammates were looking for him about 90% of the time, every time they came down offensively. And hey, Kobe said, okay, if you guys are going to shoot it, I'm going to shoot it. So I don't think we will ever see something like that happen again. The way the game is played now, maybe with Steph, because Steph does take a lot of shots, but 50 is just unfathomable. Mike, that's just crazy. I didn't think we would see Kobe throw up 50 shots. 40, okay, but 40 is just, you know, 10 less than 50. I mean, still, that's just a lot of shots. I don't know. It's hard for me to predict.
Here's one more question, and I'm going to let you get to the weekend. In baseball, since Jackie Robinson thing, remember Jackie Robinson was a second baseman.
Yeah,
and back then, they were sliding to him and try to spike him and take him out the game and everything. Now they got rules against that, sliding in the second base. They just made rules for this year. and the one that's sliding in to try to hurt injured players and try to get them out of the game. Do you think now the way the sports is set up is so that the television camera is watching everything, that you can't get away with all the kind of the dirty play that you see in, especially in baseball? So I just take that off the end. Thanks for letting me call, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike, for the call. Appreciate that. And, yeah, and again, I want to salute the great Jackie Robinson, because it is Jackie Robinson Day, and I got a chance to actually sit back and watch the PBS documentary that actually aired on WKAR-TV in a two-part series on Monday at 9 and on Tuesday at 9 p.m. And boy, oh boy, what a documentary it was. It's pretty long. It's actually 2 hours long. The first part is 2 hours, and the second part is 2 hours. So a four-hour documentary. And I sat back and watched the first 2 hours last night. And Jackie has such an incredible story. And what really amazed me about Jackie's story every time I hear it is how, you know, when he was out there playing and breaking the color barrier in the major leagues, you know, just how, you know, he, you know, all the backlash he received, he didn't bite back. He did not bite back. He did it in a way that was classy because he knew that he had an entire community on his back. So thanks so much for that, Mike. All right, we have a caller on the line, I believe, or a caller that wants to relay some information, Isaac?
Yeah, exactly. We had an anonymous donation of hockey information, if you will.
But thank you.
Anson Carter is okay. Actually an important name that I think we might have left out of the previous discussion. This caller wanted us to make it known that he and Cuba Gooding Jr. have actually started a hockey foundation out in L.A. to
really
inspire and encourage youth African-Americans to start pursuing the game. It's really interesting. Anson Carter, of course, played at Michigan State in the 90s and then went on to play professionally in Buffalo. So that was a great call and definitely some insight that we might have missed, but we all really appreciate that as always. Yeah.
I did not know that. That is very cool stuff. And yeah, that's what you have to start to see more of. You need to start to see African-American players who are in the game today giving back and introducing the game to those urban communities. So really, really appreciate that tidbit of information. All right. Again, call in if you want to contribute to today's discussion or anything on your mind. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to play a snippet of last night's Current Sports TV sit-down with motivational speaker and author DeAndre Carter, who is a dear friend of the show. We actually used to do a segment every Monday entitled Motivational Mondays with DeAndre Carter, where he would come on and he would motivate a certain athlete or team for that week. A very cool segment, and DeAndre has done some great things, some great work when it comes to his motivational speaking, and now has a book out entitled Demand Greatness, Success is Yours, as he guides his readers through how to just get the most out of their potential, so to speak. And DeAndre has talked to athletes and coaches, and it's really remarkable how he caters his message, and I should say tailors his message to that certain audience. Just a remarkable chat with him last night. And here's a snippet of that chat, as we customarily do each and every week for those that have not tuned into Current Sports TV. And I first had to ask DeAndre how in the world he got his start in the motivational speaking business. And he has a very interesting story. Check it out.
Wow. I think first it happened as a hobby or a passion. I heard a tape by Les Brown, and the tape, I'll never forget it. That's, you know, it was a cassette tape. I could put it in there back in those days. And it said, it's hard. And he talked about that life is hard, so you have to do it hard. Or whatever task or challenge is hard, you have to do it hard. And when I heard him motivating just with words, I thought, wow, that would be awesome to have that ability, that influence to say something and inspire people. And so I was in high school when I first heard this, and that's what inspired me to want to do motivational speaking. Once I found out how much money you could make, then I thought, hey, maybe I could do this as a career as well. But it always started with just the passion of trying to help people.
Gotta ask DC, do you remember getting up there in front of a big group of people and delivering your very first speech? When did that occur? And I gotta know, how did it go?
Okay, so this story is funny because I've since then become much more accomplished and acclaimed. But I remember the very first speech.
Okay.
It was a high school assembly. You know, you get all your peers together and you come out on stage, and it was Mike Tyson's comeback fight going against Peter McNeely.
Okay.
And so I was going to talk about how to be courageous. Everybody's talking about Mike Tyson. I wanted to talk about Peter McNeely and how much courage it takes to go and fight Mike Tyson, right? It
takes a lot of courage.
And I didn't realize that I didn't have enough courage to stand up at the podium without shaking. because my leg just kept shaking. And I think my fingerprints are still glued onto the sides of the podium back at that high school, because that's how tightly I was gripping it. And I don't remember what I said. I don't remember how long. I just remember feeling like it wasn't the best. So I went back to my English homeroom, and one of my friends came in, and she just looked at me with one of those looks like she was going to say something I didn't want to hear. So I let her know I really didn't want to hear it. So I turned around, but she said, "DeAndre, that was the worst speech I ever heard in my life."
No, she said that?
Yes, out loud. She was thinking it, but then she actually said it out loud. And so at that point, I retired. I said, you know, motivational speaking isn't for me. I hung it up after the first speech. It wasn't until a few years later, hearing Les Brown and hearing some other speakers, that I decided to come back out and redeem myself. But that's how it started out.
Wow. Now, DC, we've known each other for years. I have never heard that story. I didn't know that initially you were discouraged and did not decide to go this route.
I hung it up, Al. I said, this is not for me. What's interesting is that was junior year of high school. 3 years later, sophomore year in college, that same girl came to Michigan State.
Right.
We were over in Hubbard Hall. She came through the door, and I was hosting the event. And she said, "DeAndre, this better not be boring." You can tell she's interesting personality. Oh. I looked at her right in the eye and said, "This will be the best speech you've ever heard. And if you're not motivated in the first 5 minutes, I will pause, look at you, and allow you to get up and walk out."
There you go. You were that confident that day.
By that time. Yeah.
Oh,
and when I left, she was like, "That was the best speech I heard in my life." So
the complete opposite.
Yeah. 3 years later, what a difference some time can make.
I want to talk about this great piece of work right here, because I got a chance to actually preview it before it hits the stand, so to speak. All right. Demand greatness, success is yours. Can you sort of take us through what inspired this book, and where do you start, DC? Because I know you have so many things flowing through that head of yours, and to sort of organize it into a step-by-step process to inspire those who read this piece of work. I mean, where did you start?
Well, it's an incredible process, because there's so much material over the years that I've gained working with people.
Right.
I've done almost 1,000 presentations in many different states and traveled so many different places and worked with people of all ages. So you get a lot of perspective. All you have to do is observe, and you'll learn a lot. And so what I wanted to do was write a book that addressed anyone. And what I mean by that is, no situation is final and no situation is hopeless. So I wanted to write a book that I could put in somebody's hand and says, no matter who you are, where you are, this will impact you. So the whole theory is this: everybody has a next level. No matter who you are, where you are, what you've done, there's another step that you can take. And you're not there yet, because it's the next level. There's growth. None of us are in our final stage. And so what I did is I wrote a book based off a formula that allows you to understand that the potential you have creates a possibility.
All right, folks. Again, DeAndre Carter, motivational speaker and author. He was my guest on Current Sports TV last night, and he was absolutely fantastic. If you missed it and want to catch the visual of that episode, and also we brought a fantastic feature done by our very own Andrea Urban, which highlights one of the best girls high school basketball players in the area. She will be going into her sophomore year at Okemos High School next season. Her name is Leah Hartman. You get to catch that feature and so much more. Check it out by simply going to video.wkar.org. Again, that's video.wkar.org. All right, folks, 5 minutes left in the show. We love to close out each and every week here on WKAR's Current Sports by reflecting a bit on the week that was here on the show and beyond, and to bring up a few stories that we may not have gotten the chance to discuss. We dub it Reflection Friday. All right, first, I got to bring up this. I want to play a snippet from Fox Sports' Jason Whitlock, who is now a blogger for Fox Sports 1. He was not among those impressed by Kobe Bryant's Hollywood ending, in which, of course, he poured in 60 points in his final game on the hardwood against the Utah Jazz now 2 days ago. Check out what Whitlock had to say on The Herd, filling in for Fox Sports radio host Colin Cowherd. Check out this rant.
He destroyed a franchise. His narcissism and selfishness destroyed a franchise. The Lakers are a laughingstock and just had the most embarrassing season we've pretty much ever seen an NBA team have. And Jack Nicholson and everybody's sitting at courtside celebrating this, standing ovation, And then we're heaping on more fraudulence to the night. Magic Johnson calling him the greatest Laker. No, he's not. And Magic knows it. Magic and Kareem are the greatest Lakers. Imitation is the highest form of flattery. And so Michael Jordan should be very flattered at Kobe's 20-year career. The imitator, imitation is often a sign of fraudulence. Kobe Bryant, the most fraudulent superstar celebrity athlete we have ever seen.
Okay, again, that was Jason Whitlock of Fox Sports talking about his displeasure with the whole Kobe Bryant, you know, final game 60-point performance that occurred 2 days ago. Now, I must say, Isaac, there's a few parts that I agree with Jason when it comes to this conversation, there's one part that I totally disagree with. Now, imitation is the highest form of flattery. But what I've always admired about Kobe is he's able to reach back into the past. And Michael did it too. Let's be honest here. Michael admits that when he first came into the league, he stole a lot of stuff from the one, the only Julius Erving, Dr. J. And he patented a lot of his stuff from Dr. J, okay? And he made it his own. Kobe Bryant, yeah. You know, did he walk and talk like Michael? Yeah. Did he have the fadeaway? Did he try to patent his fadeaway just like Michael's? Yeah, certainly. When you look at Kobe Bryant's game, it's a direct correlation to Michael's game. But Kobe was so efficient in doing that. Kobe Bryant was a fantastic, fantastic player and will go down as one of the greatest Lakers of all time. But fraudulent, I wouldn't go that far. But he does have a point because there's a method to Kobe's madness that fizzled out in late in his career. Let's be real here. Kobe did chase away a lot of players. And the Lakers had, they have, one of the, or if not the, worst season in franchise history this past season. I think a lot of it has to do with Kobe Bryant. Nobody wanted to play with Kobe. Kobe's attitude and his hands-on approach to who comes into organization, who goes out of the organization, that scared a lot of people away from playing alongside him. Thus, the talent did not accrue within the Lakers organization. So I know exactly where Jason is going with that statement, and I frankly have to agree with it. Does that take away a bit of Kobe's greatness? I don't know, and I don't think so, because that's just who Kobe is. Michael Jordan will be the first to admit that he wasn't the greatest teammate. But the thing is, there's a culture shift. Back in the 90s, in the 80s, from the 90s in back, you didn't have players requesting trades and going and hopping on to different teams like you do today. You know, Steve Kerr and all those guys had to endure Michael's attitude. I mean, heck, he punched Steve Kerr in the face, for goodness sake. You know what I mean? Let that happen today, oh, that player would have been gone to a different team. So there was a culture shift. Players endure it playing with Michael because simply they had to. Simple as that. Nowadays, in this era, you can't do that. So I think that Kobe's attitude is just really a victim of circumstance when you look at it.
Yeah, I think Kobe is most hated and most loved. And I think there's a reason for both, because the guy was effective. He won 5 championships. At the same time, I have trouble disagreeing with a single thing that Whitlock said. Did he kind of ruin that franchise
fraudulent,
towards
though?
The end of his career? Maybe not fraudulent.
I don't know about
fraudulent
that fraudulent
is a
part.
Strong word.
That's a very
but
strong word.
He tanked that franchise the last few years because he had a $29 million salary, the most in the league.
Right.
Nobody could afford to hire a new free agent that would help him out, let alone he scared off all the good ones anyway. So that's definitely part of it. And then you've got this whole retirement tour. I respect what he did for the game, but a year, that's a lot for fans to come out and say thank you, Kobe.
All right, and also I want to mention that the Detroit Pistons, they embark on their playoff run this Sunday. Congratulations to the Pistons. Again, game 2 for the Red Wings takes place tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Oh, boy, it's a fun time to be a Detroit pro sports fan. I tell you that, folks. All right, folks, enjoy the weekend. It's supposed to be 70 degrees and sunny throughout much of the weekend. Be safe. Have a good one, folks. Get out and get some fresh air, all right? You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Be easy, people.